weakening the yen to help Japan.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's been a week to the day since disaster struck Japan. Estimates are that the earthquake and resulting tsunami killed thousands of people and left an already weak Japanese economy in shambles. Today, the G7 industrialized economies have agreed to intervene to weaken the Japanese yen in the foreign currencies market. The yen was down a bit today from record highs against the U.S. dollar. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London, the world's largest currency market. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
Now, this is a pretty unusual move. The G7 hasn't done this in 10 years. Why are they doing it?
Well, that's a good question, because the rise in the yen itself didn't pose any serious threat to the U.S. or Europe, but it is a problem for Japan. A rising yen makes its all-important exports more expensive. So the G7 has stepped in to sell the yen, push the currency down again as an act of solidarity, a mark of sympathy for Japan, as Marcus Nolan of the Peterson Institute in Washington told the BBC.
The Japanese are in trouble. They are going through a very difficult situation. And basically, this is the other countries around the world saying, we're with you. We can't do anything to fix your nuclear reactor, but we can make sure that you don't get creamed in the exchange market.
All right, a mark of sympathy. But is it going to work, Stephen? Will it hold down the yen?
Well, these interventions have a patchy record, and certainly when it's one central bank working on its own, it's usually doomed to failure. But this is a coordinated joint action by the most powerful central banks on the planet, the Fed, the ECB, and the Bank of Japan. Analysts here are telling me it stands a fairly good chance of success in the short term.
All right. Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Let's do the numbers. Markets are higher right now, about 0.5% on average. The Dow up 98 points, about 0.75% at 11,873. Shares in Tokyo were up 2.5% today. The Federal Reserve is expected to lift restrictions on some of the nation's biggest banks. That's so they can pay out more of their profits to shareholders. The Fed's been keeping a pretty tight rein on the banks since bailing them out during the financial crisis. Well, bonuses at some of the nation's biggest companies have rebounded in fast fashion. The Wall Street Journal commissioned a study of 50 major corporations and their executive pay. It shows bonuses were up a median of more than 30%. Joanne Lublin is an editor who covers executive pay for the Journal, and she's with us live from New York. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
So really, a 30% rise? Why?
Well, it's actually closer to 31. It's 30.5%. And this is actually the biggest gain in bonuses we've seen for CEO pay in at least 3 years. But for many of these CEOs, it's coming after a year in which they got little or no bonuses back in 2009. So this is a bounce back that reflects the recovery.
How do these CEOs explain the increased bonuses? Is that what they're saying, that, oh, I didn't get a bonus last year, so this is making up for it?
Well, the CEOs don't get to choose how much of a bonus they get. That's decided by the boards. But what we saw in some of this data is that the profits at these companies did not climb as quickly as did the bonuses for the CEO. The net income only went up about 19%. And the reason there is that early last year, when these boards were deciding what kind of targets to set for their CEOs, some of them kind of lowered the bar a little bit, and so it was kind of easy to hit a home run.
Wow. The new financial overhaul law made it a requirement that investors have a say on executive rewards, right? Has that changed the way bonuses get handed out?
Not really, because it's quite early in the game. Only in annual meetings that have been held since the end of January have these kinds of votes been required. And at the end of the day, how the shareholders vote is not binding. It's totally an advisory measure. The board can decide to ignore the vote if the shareholders give thumbs down to their executive pay practices. And that's already happened, frankly, at two companies, and not much has changed.
All right. Joanne Lublin from The Wall Street Journal. Joanne, thank you.
You're welcome, Steve.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reputation.com, monitoring, protecting, and improving reputations online while deleting personal data from the Internet. Reputation.com. by Thomson Reuters, committed to empowering professionals of the world with the knowledge needed to do what they do best, the knowledge effect. And by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com.
You hear a lot about cigarette taxes going up. Well, today the story is cigarette taxes potentially going down. Lawmakers in New Hampshire are the latest to try and boost revenue by cutting tobacco taxes. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
The argument goes, lower your cigarette tax and more smokers will come over the border from neighboring states where the tax is higher to buy their smokes. The Republican-controlled New Hampshire House yesterday passed a 10-cent tax reduction to $1.68 a pack, compared to $2 or more in Maine, Massachusetts, and Vermont.
40% of all of our sales in New Hampshire are sold to out-of-state consumers.
John Dumas heads the State Grocers Association. He says raising cigarette taxes, as New Hampshire has done in recent years, just drives away sales.
It forces those who legally want to smoke to go to either internet sales, black market, or some Indian reservations outside of New Hampshire to buy their product. They're still going to buy it, but just human nature, they're going to buy it at the lowest price they can.
Opponents to states lowering their cigarette taxes, though, say it's a net loss for state revenues at a time they can ill afford it, and it might increase smoking, leading to higher health care costs. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And finally, from the DMV in London, after numerous attempts, a British woman has yet to pass her driver's test. She has failed it 90 times. 90, 9-0. The woman's paid $4,500 so far in fees. That's the $50 test fee over and over and over again. Well, it could be worse. A couple years back, a South Korean driver finally passed her driver's test after failing it 950 times. She's still on the road today. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles, on Twitter at Radio Chio, and online at Marketplace.org, where you can share your thoughts with us. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Covering the economy is a 24/7, 365 kind of thing. So every Friday, we get a little help from our friends.
We were sinking fast, and we had no idea whether the world was coming to an end or not.
Oil goes high enough, people stop driving, they stop buying cars, they stop going out to eat.
There are bumps in the road, but consumers are starting to feel better.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the Weekly Wrap, next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.